The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
I was really interested in this exclusive story in The West today by state politics editor Peter Law, who sat down with China's newly appointed Consul General in Perth. Never before has the relationship between WA and China been as important as it is now. And Pete joins me now. Good morning, mate.
Morning, Ben.
So what can you tell us about the new Consul General?
Well, he most recently was the Consul General in Lahore, a city in Pakistan. And he was posted here after his predecessor. She fell ill last year, kind of midway through the pandemic, and returned back to China. So it's been about 12 months while Western Australia has been without a permanent consul general. He touched down in April, served his 2 weeks isolation in Sydney, and he's been here for a couple of weeks. So we thought it was a good opportunity to request an interview, which was granted.
And how difficult is it to get an audience with the Consul General?
Well, I suppose there'd been a bit of groundwork laid. It's something that I may have known that I was keen as soon as I was aware of his appointment. So there was a couple of weeks back and forth. But once it was granted, it was surprisingly straightforward. We went down to the consulate in East Perth, which I don't know if anyone has seen it. It looks like a bit of a fortress, as you'd expect. Yeah. Instead of actually going inside, we were taken by one of his colleagues around to his residence, which is by the waterfront in East Perth. I'm sure it's a building I've walked or jogged past many times without noticing, but now I know what it is. I'll certainly be taking more note of it. Very impressive residence, high roofs, Chinese flags, Australian flags. And we sat down and had a pretty wide-ranging chat for about half an hour.
Yeah, wow. And so can you give us some idea of what you and Long Ding Bing spoke about?
Yeah, it's a good question, because from when I first put in this interview request, say, 3 or 4 weeks ago, the whole dynamic of the relationship is, to be honest, shifting day to day, week to week. A couple of weeks ago, it was all about iron ore, the relationship with WA, trade sanctions, and then suddenly we've seen this shift in rhetoric from both sides, obviously including the Australian side as well, with talk of war, with the Home Affairs Secretary talk about the drums of war are beating. We had the Defence Minister, newly promoted Peter Dutton, saying that a conflict between the United States and China could not be discounted. So we touched on those issues, which a few weeks ago wouldn't have probably even crossed my mind. We talked about the relationship with WA and how that compares to Canberra. He was very careful not to criticise any individuals, be it ministers or bureaucrats in Canberra, but he was full of praise for the WA Premier, Mark McGowan, who consistently for the last 12 months, since the relationship has turned sour, called for a reset. He's obviously highly conscious of WA's reliance on the Chinese trade relationship and what that means for jobs. We talked about what could help reset that, what it means for iron ore, and a bit of COVID-19 as well.
Well, it certainly was wide-ranging. And now, as you say, Premier Mark McGowan has been at pains to, I guess, separate WA a little bit from the rhetoric coming out of Canberra on China. Has Mr. Long already met with McGowan?
Yes, he told me that while he was in isolation in Sydney, the Premier's office got in contact with him as a priority to set up a meeting. And I think it was a matter of among his first days in Western Australia was to sit down with Mark McGowan, which didn't surprise me at all, given everything that we've heard from the Premier over the last year. And he was full of praise, talking about the kindness and friendship, not only of the Premier, but more broadly of West Australians. I think in the politics realm, the coalition in Canberra are well aware that standing and talking tough to China is politically popular, but I think that is probably quite a different, it's probably perceived quite differently in Western Australia, where so many jobs are directly reliant on that relationship.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. And so what did the Consul General say about his hopes for future relations between our countries?
Well, first of all, unsurprisingly, he said the Chinese were not to blame. He said that the Australians were to blame. Anyone who's followed this over the last year would know that it takes two to tango on this particular issue. But he was keen to talk. The rhetoric he used was about getting the cooperative relationship, which dates back 50 years. He was at pains to repeatedly point out to me he was keen to get that back onto a normal track, was the phrasing that he used. And obviously that is also above his level. That's his colleagues in Canberra, his colleagues in Beijing, working with the leaders in Australia. As far as we can tell, they barely even talk at the moment, according to federal ministers who say that their phone calls are not returned. But clearly that can be worked on at a state level as well, hence this very early meeting between the Premier and the Consul General.
Mm. And so much of the relationship between China and Western Australia is based on iron ore. Did the Consul General have any thoughts on supply and costs?
Yeah, he admitted that he was no expert when it comes to resources, the valuable resources in Western Australia, but I'm sure it's an issue that he's learning as we speak. He expressed concern about the rising cost of iron ore. Again, as I say, a few weeks ago when I submitted this request, it was around about $170, $180 US a tonne. And then we've seen it absolutely skyrocket over the last fortnight to in excess of $230 a tonne. So he did express some concern about that rising cost. He said it was not all down to Chinese demand post-COVID, which economists and analysts almost universally attribute to China's insatiable demand for the commodity. He said it was also being driven by world demand. He described investments motivated by profit driving up the price. And on the crucial question of will iron ore exports be, you know, caught up in this worsening relationship, could we see trade sanctions on this most valuable export? His direct quote was, many companies focus on iron ore trade. I'm also concerned, but in my opinion, iron ore will not be affected so far.
Yeah, and I think a lot of economists think that as well, simply because it is so important to China, as opposed to wine, barley, some of those other things.
And now, there's not many other places you can get it from.
Yeah, that's right, especially at the moment with Brazil production kind of crueled by COVID. And now, did he say anything about tourism and whether Australia and Western Australia specifically was a good destination and whether he'd be encouraging his countrymen to visit Western Australia once the borders reopen?
Yeah, and I specifically asked that question because we recently saw China suspending the China-Australia Strategic Dialogue, which is essentially like a bilateral communication channel between Beijing and Canberra. That's been ceased, and that was in direct retaliation, or at least it was perceived as being in direct retaliation to the Morrison government tearing up Victoria's Belt and Road deal with Beijing. And it is, when that story blew up over the last couple of weeks, the embassy in Canberra was talking about, well, you know, maybe post-COVID Chinese students and tourists won't be returning to Australia, which would obviously be a major blow to our universities and our tourism sector. When I asked that very question, he was much more positive. He spelt out the obvious, which is we've got to get the pandemic under control. We've got to see the borders reopen. But he was certainly hopeful and positive that Chinese tourists and students would be returning to Western Australia.
Yeah, well, hopefully they just see West Australia as separate from the rest of Australia and all of those Chinese tourists only come to the West, forget about the East Coast. That is what we'd love to see over here. And now let's talk local politics, because obviously we've been talking a lot this week about the shocking report that was leaked into the death of Aishwarya Aswath at PCH last month. It's so damning. And the question keeps returning to the minister, Health Minister Roger Cook, and how he's handling this situation. What's your reading of that?
Yeah, I mean, as journalists, we do jump to the question of can he survive? Will he quit? Will he be sacked? And we asked all those questions of he and the Premier last week when the first 10 pages of the report were tabled in Parliament, and the Premier was emphatic that he's not going anywhere. He retains the Premier's confidence. And through those press conferences last week, one thing that jumped out at me was that as soon as the full report was released, released by the family or family advocate, that it would take some of the heat off the politicians. And I do believe that that is what has happened. The part of the report that we saw last week did talk about broader issues within that emergency department. The other 20 pages that we have seen yesterday after it was finally released really gave us a blow-by-blow account of what happened on that awful night to that poor family.
And so
I think anyone who's got kids couldn't help but be angered reading the detail of basically how they were ignored for 100 minutes, despite raising their concerns at least five times.
And so do you think the health minister is being a bit cute when he says, you know, don't be the judge and jury of the medical staff working that night, because he knows that the leaking of the report does more than he ever needs to do, so he can keep his hands clean knowing that people are now turning the blame to those staff?
I think they were aware that scrutiny would turn to the decisions made by those individuals when the report came out. There's no doubt about that, and that's what's happening. Was he being too cute? No. I think he was, on a personal level, I think he doesn't want to condemn those individuals. As he told Parliament last week, I wasn't there. I don't know their thought processes, and I'm not going to be quick to judge them.
So that's sincere. So you think that sentiment is definitely sincere from him?
I do think that is sincere. Secondly, I also think if he were to condemn them, that would not go down particularly well in the court of public opinion, because it would be seen to be finger-pointing. I also think it would absolutely infuriate the nurses' union, and they would be calling for his head. We would see hundreds of nurses on the steps of Parliament, and that could end his career.
Mm. Yeah, that's, I think, probably the only thing that will at this point. So staying on the good side of the union makes a lot of sense. The West Australian state political editor, Peter Law, will let you get back to chasing stories today. Thanks for being on The West Live.
Thanks, Ben.